And you wish upon a star, makes no difference who you are.
It does bring back little tinglies when you think of Walt Disney, doesn't
right?
it?
I mean, Disney is now so many things to so many people, as it is so appreciated as a company, as an experience, as a theme park, as an entertainment business, as all of those things. But it all started with one man and in one place, at least on the park side. And excited to have on the line with us in this the author of the book Eat Like Walt: The Wonderful World of Disney Food, in its third printing, best-selling book. And the author is Marcy Carricker Smothers. Welcome to WGN.
Hi, Wendy. Hi, Dane. Thrilled to be here. We got to convert Wendy over to the Disneyland side, Dane.
Right. Before we had you on, I will defend myself. I had some less than stellar appearances at Disney World as a child, some trauma, just bad things that happened. And I think I may be getting sucked into the whole Disney because of Disneyland. We went there for the first time 3 years ago. We have gone back every year since, and it is kind of a magical place.
Kind of.
I know.
Yeah. Totally a magical place. But yeah, you know, so yeah, I've been listening to your show and enjoying you guys. So I did hear about the trauma, but I want to overcome it. And I want to remind you that as far as I know, your name was invented by Barry for Peter Pan. So you have a deep connection already. But yeah, so Disneyland is the only park that Walt played in, worked in, slept in, and that's sort of where I'm going with my next book, which we'll talk about, A Walk in the Park with Walt Disney, is making sure that Walt Disney's legacy in Disneyland is preserved for generations and generations, because there is something about, in my opinion, about Disneyland that is unique to all the parks in the world, is that you feel Walt there. His DNA is there. His legacy, his person, everything that he wanted is imbued, and you know, people go all the time. Other fans and friends tell me they go to Walt's apartment or look up to Walt's apartment above the fire station and say, "Thank you, Walt." So
my youngest son made us do that and said, "Look, you can see his shadow." He's 16, almost 17, but he has all of Disney in his heart, 100%.
And Marcy,
I love that.
If you can, for the listeners that have been to Disney World and all of those surrounding parks and feel like they have done that, how could it be any better or any different? Give outside of Walt's presence and certainly the food side, we'll get into all that, but give them a little insight into what makes Disneyland like different, right? Where it's worth a trip of its own.
Well, I like to say that Disneyland is the crown jewel. Walt knew about Walt Disney World, which, by the way, he was calling Disney World. And after he passed away, his brother Roy insisted that forever it should be known as Walt Disney World, because there would be no Disney World without Walt. So I have to ask both Wendy and my friend Dane to please refer to it as Walt Disney World. It's really, really important for those of us that want to preserve Walt's legacy. But at Disneyland, I call that the crown jewel, and I call Walt Disney World the treasure chest because it's overflowing. But Disneyland has a magic that is everything that was Walt Disney. I mean, he had this incredible ability to understand what America wanted and what they could relate to. And he was a very everyday human being. That's what people that I spoke with that knew Walt, and everybody, by the way, in Eat Like Walt and my next book, knew Walt Disney, no third person, no exceptions, whether I meet them or I read interviews or transcripts with them in the archives. And so that is what it is. It is Walt Disney. Disneyland is Walt Disney.
When we went this past July, there was an exhibit celebrating a certain amount of years at Disney or something. There was something right as you walked in with a lot of the Haunted Mansion. I think it was 50 years of Haunted Mansion or something. But they had all this artwork, and that was in that little museum right as you walk in. And just looking at the original map of the park, it really did give me... All right, I am completely into Disneyland.
Nice.
Okay? It really was like... tingly, you know?
I get tingly just talking about it. I mean, and that's why I'm so honored to be a Disneyland historian in Walt's era. You're talking about the Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln, the Opera House,
yes.
Which was an original, that was an original building. Disneyland opened in 1955, and actually the mill was contained in there. That's where they were making the wood and getting everything ready to build the attractions. And that attraction itself, Mr. Lincoln, is very important to Walt. I mean, he was a fierce patriot. Abraham Lincoln was his hero. He was, you know, that was the first big audio animatronic before the Walt Disney's Enchanted, first big human Walt human being audio animatronic, and it was very important for Walt that young people knew the history of America. That's why at the time it was an additional ticket to get in, but Walt let youngsters, you know, 17 and younger, come in for free. And that poster with Walt telling young people they could come into that attraction for free is still in that area you're talking about, where they have the original sort of map for Disneyland from 1955 and the Haunted Mansion exhibit, which it was its 50th. It was 1969 when it opened. And interestingly, Walt had been talking about that attraction all the way back in the 50s, even though it didn't open until after he passed away. So he had some input in there. He had been talking to his Imagineers about it for quite a while. It sat empty. The shelves sat empty for several years while he went to work on the World's Fair for other attractions, including Mr. Lincoln and It's a Small World.
We'll let the listeners know we're talking with Marcy Carricker-Smithers. She's the author of Eat Like Walt, The Wonderful World of Disney Food. There are a lot of books out there about Disney, about Walt Disney, about him, the man. What's special about Marcy is that her books are a direct connect to Walter, to Walt Disney, to his family, his own experiences, right, Marcy? Because it's his own recollections or pictures or testaments from the family or people who work directly with him. This isn't just about him. This is really from him.
It is my, thank you, that's really well said. It is my, for lack of a better term, love letter to Walt Disney, Eat Like Walt, and the next book. You know, there is a famous Imagineer designer, close friend of Walt Disney, known as Herb Ryman, and he drew the concept map with Walt when Walt called him on a Saturday and said, "Hey, Herbie, can you come to the studio? I have a project." Herbie came and he said, "I need this map. My brother's going to New York in 2 days to sell the Bankers on Disneyland, and I need you to draw it." And Herbie said, "No, I'm not." Walt said, Yes, you are. And so finally Herbie said, you know, Walt turned away and looked over his shoulder and said, "Will you do it if I stay with you?" And Herbie said yes, and so they stayed together for those 48 hours and drew the original concept map. But Herbie had a quote that really affected me and still affects me as an author. And I apply that to everything that I do because Walt was a human being, and everybody talks about that. So Herbie's quote to another author, but for really everybody, was, "It's for people like yourself to have the privilege and the duty of presenting Walt as a human being and a person who can be known, a person you can be close to." And that is my goal.
Well, here's the thing, too, is we're going to get into the food, the specific food, maybe some Thanksgiving stuff when we come back after the break, as well as a little bit about what makes it special and the new book as well when we come back, right?
That's right. That's what we'll do here on 720 WGN. All right. Are we going to talk more Disney? Because I'm excited about this book.
We are on the line with us, excited to have Marcy Carricker-Smithers. She is the author of the hit best-selling book, Eat Like Walt, The Wonderful World of Walt Disney Food. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting looking into this, Marcy, is that as for all the things that Disneyland means to people, whether it's their rides, the attraction, the nostalgia, the characters, that early on Walt had said that he wanted to make the food experience, which was really unheard of at the time, just as important as the others.
Absolutely. I mean, I think themed food, it didn't really start with Walt Disney, but it was certainly accelerated. Sort of the proof of concept that I had for the book was started out with the culinary history of Disneyland. Had it ever been written about? And it hadn't. So in my research, I found an insert for a newspaper in Orange County. In it, Walt said, "Welcome to the Kingdom of Good Eating, where the food is as fabulous as the fun." And I still get goosebumps when I say that, because it was my proof of concept that Walt had intended for the food experiences at Disneyland from the very beginning in 1955 to be immersive and entertaining, just like the attractions.
Give me some examples, because I'm thinking back of what we had to eat. We had some very fine chicken tenders. They were very good. And honestly, I remember thinking, you know, any theme park could have just anything and get you by. But this was honestly pretty good. But give us some specifics.
Well, back in Walt's day, you know, again, 1955 in Tomorrowland, there was the space bar, and it was going to be like this big vending machine sort of automat thing, and that got way scaled down, as a lot did, as the time, you know, Disneyland was built in a year, by the way, so, and Tomorrowland was
what?
The land that...
Wait,
yeah.
Really? 1 year?
Yeah, 1 year. Imagine that now, right?
Wow, I can't.
Yeah. So Space Bar had vending machines, which was kind of, you know, cool. Then they had also in Tomorrowland was, you know, they had the submarine, right, where the submarine ride is now, there were these Phantom boats. And so there they were selling submarine sandwiches in the snack bar there. So it was kind of themed to the nautical area there. In Frontierland, they had food, Aunt Jemima's Pancake House, and they served, Davy Crockett this. So he was trying very on, but the masterpiece, of course, would be the Blue Bayou restaurant attached to Pirates of the Caribbean. And that was really among the very first theme restaurants in America. I mean, fully themed out. And what's kind of interesting was the restaurant was ready to go. Well, his last land was New Orleans Square, and he dedicated New Orleans Square in 1966. The Blue Bayou restaurant was ready, but the Pirates of the Caribbean ride was not, and Walt said it wouldn't be a good show if the boats weren't floating by. So that restaurant did not open, and the Pirates of the Caribbean attraction did not open until after Walt passed away in 1967. And then as time goes on from the Blue Bayou, we can look all around the park, and the theming is incredible. And also at Disney California Adventure, boy, I mean, just go to Cars Land, and I'm incredibly impressed with, you know, the food theming there throughout the park.
Got to get a turkey leg. That's all I'm telling you. I need to share this text with you because it's really sweet. 773 says, I still remember the delicious omelet I had at Disneyland when I was 15. I am now 72 years old.
Wow.
Well, food is a huge part of our memory system, you know, and it transports us as much as it satiates us. And to Dane's point earlier, I think the two questions that everybody asks when they go to Disneyland is, what's your favorite attraction? And we do try to call them attractions, not rides. And what's your favorite food? That's what everybody wants to know. So I have to ask you two, what's your favorite attraction? What's your favorite food at Disneyland?
Pirates of the Caribbean, for sure. I absolutely love that. And I have not gone to that restaurant yet, but every time we go, I'm like, why can't we do that? How cool would that be? As for food, I don't know. I don't really have a particular one that I love.
I would tell your listeners, you know, go to Disney Dining because you can book dining 60 days in advance for restaurants like the Blue Bayou that are really, really popular. And you have to remember, when that restaurant opened, there was no, I mean, kids at home, there was no internet, there was no phone. You had to run. The minute the ropes dropped, people ran to the restaurant to put their name on the list to go. So we've evolved a long way to, in terms of getting
in. And wait, I have to jump in because I was able to experience a lovely alcoholic beverage in the Star Wars Cantina. So that is my favorite place of everything right now. That was really cool. They give you a 2-drink maximum. You go in, and once your 2 drinks are done, and you have to make reservations. But that was a sight to see, and very good cocktails.
So, Marcy, here's the other side of it too. Is one of the things that is special about the book, and I heard that Jazzy had told us that we're going to be able to give an autographed copy to one of the listeners before or just after we let you go. But talk about Walt himself, how he was. You know, he appreciated the importance of food as far as the experiences, but in the book you share not only things that he liked, things that he ate, recipes, but also on the Thanksgiving side, things he would look forward to.
Well, he was extremely simple eater, so despite his incredible fame and wealth, when he could eat anything he wanted, he stuck with his very humble upbringing, liked plain foods like hamburgers, hot dogs, popcorn, you know, and roast meats and potatoes, nothing fancy. When he had the Plaza Inn, which was first Red Wagon, but the Plaza Inn at Disneyland, that was his idea of people having a fancy meal at a fair price. And by the way, he also didn't want people to have to tip, so no tipping policy. That's how far ahead Walt was. But yeah, he would come home almost every night, have dinner with his family. Oftentimes he would eat on TV trays with Lillian, watch TV. And he did not, he kind of eschewed a lot of the fancy Hollywood parties and all that type of stuff. So, you know, his humility was found in his food as well. And in the book, there is an incredible list that his housekeeper, whom he called his Mary Poppins, had posted on the refrigerator because she made everything from scratch from Walt. And he kind of got tired of the meals that Lillian was repeating time and time again. And he wrote a list of his favorite foods. And that was something that is enshrined at the Walt Disney Family Museum in San Francisco. I really encourage people to come. And they allowed it to be printed for the first time in my book, Eat Like Walt. I think like 80% of the images have never been seen before.
That's amazing. And listeners are reminding me, Dole Whip. That's right. Dole Whip is my favorite.
Yeah, Dole Whip came long after Walt, but it is really probably that. And I think you would say turkey legs and corn dogs. And quickly, the best corn dog is at the Little Red Wagon Cart, which is on Main Street USA, just outside the Plaza Inn. That's an homage to the Walt Disney original 1955 restaurant was there called the Red Wagon Inn. That was a lessee. Swiss Red Wagon's icon was that red wagon. So that's why the cart's there. But those are the superior hot dogs. Jonathan Gold, that won the Pulitzer Prize in the Los Angeles Times, yeah, said that's the best hot dog he's ever had.
Wow. And we did have one there, yes.
Yeah.
Really good.
You have to go there because it's, yeah, because that's, they only make corn dogs there, right? So they don't share the oil with fish sticks and mozzarella sticks and french fries and chicken nuggets. So that's the superior place at Disneyland to get a corn dog.
We're going
to
have links up at WGNradio.com as well. In about the less than a minute we have left, and we'll congratulate the listener who gets the book. Tease us just a little bit about the new book that's coming out that's going to be just as special.
May 2021, it's Walt's Disneyland, A Walk in the Park with Walt Disney. It's a guide to Disneyland told in Walt's words, or those who built Disneyland with him. So it's an entirely unique perspective. And people say to me, I say to you, oh, you can hear Walt, you can hear Walt. And they say, you mean you can read Walt? I'm like, no, you can actually hear him when you read these quotes because, you know, again, with Disney Plus, and people have seen Walt Disney and heard Walt Disney's voice. And when you see it in writing, you are transported to 1955 when he was building the park, 1954 and 55 when he was building the park and it opened. I mean, it is, I saw his desk diary, by the way, and those were incredible to go through in the Walt Disney Archives. And in 1955, it said July 12th through 25, no appointments.
And
that's because, you know, Disneyland was opening and he blocked off everything to be there for that special time. And so you will hear all about what, how Disneyland was in his mind. He had planned it for 20 years before it opened, all the way to every single attraction and Walt's last day at Disneyland.
Oh, I can't wait to read that and Eat Like Walt as well, which is available now, The Wonderful World of Disney Food.
And Marcy, as we let you go in the last couple seconds, just give information where people can catch up with your adventures, see what's happening, get the book and all that.
I am at foodwinemarcy.com and also on social media, on Instagram and Twitter as foodwinemarcy. That's Marcy with a Y. And also there is a website, eatlikewalt.com, dedicated to this book. And you can find it on Amazon. And please do support your independent booksellers because I'm sure they'd be happy to order it for you as well.
Great to meet you. Great to talk to you.
Thanks, Marcy.
We'll see you guys at Disneyland real soon.
Talk to you soon.
Absolutely. How do you want to give away really quickly? Number caller, 312-981-7200, an autographed copy of Eat Like Walt.
You want to go five?
Sure.
So we'll go the fifth caller, 312-981-7200. We'll get the copy of the book autographed by Marcy. And so I guess just give a call.
Caller number five, you said?
Caller number five.
All right, 312-981-7200. And news coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.